Hi, Mimi, it's Jeffrey Wells speaking from Hollywood Elsewhere. Nice to speak to you.
Nice to speak to you.
I was just, I'm a fan very much of the fullness of the story that is told. I mentioned to Leslie the other day that, you know, obviously I was very impressed by the look of it. It looks filmic. It doesn't look like a television piece, particularly the graphics at the beginning of Brando. It tells you right away that you've made some extra effort, and it's clearly a first-rate job. I just want to compliment both of you on it.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate that.
I got into a couple of issues with Leslie. He didn't seem to know too much about it, so I thought I'd ask you if it's okay.
Okay, no problem.
The thing that I mentioned at one point was I know that the best way, the only real way to get into a subject about a man who is known worldwide as the guy who had a brilliant first 10 years or 9 years and then sort of went downhill and then had another brief surge in 71, 72 and then kind of... you know, gave up the ghost or went downhill or became cynical or whatever. But basically, he's a metaphor. Marlon Brando is a metaphor for a wasted talent. And the only person that in your doc that seemed to even allude to that, I mean, nobody said it in so many words because everybody feels, you know, warmth and affection.
Right.
You know, because they cared about him, obviously. And who's going to, you know, it's not the role of the person who loved a person or who admire, you know, to trash them. That's them. That. So I was just kind of wondering. Leslie said, "Well, we just want to talk to the friends." Well, that means it's basically this. You know, you're not going to get the hard truth of the man. And I was just
right.
You know,
well, I think in terms of his career, I mean, I think there were a lot of people who were talking about how, you know, he didn't really do a lot of his best work, say in the '60s. And, you know, Bud Schulberg, you know, said that, you know, he was really doing movies that were beneath him. And you know, he was very upset about that. And, I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, tried to address it, said, like James Caan and John Turturro were kind of saying, how do you can't keep doing Streetcar and On the Waterfront. Those writers and those directors aren't around, you know? It's very hard to find.
Right.
And then also I think George answered it very well when he said, you know, people who think he was wasting his talent, those people just don't understand Brando, because that's not the way he looked at it at all.
You think he was fulfilling his talent by putting on a white wig and acting in Superman?
No, but I think that he wasn't that, he didn't take it that serious. But, you know, I don't think he cared that much. And he, you know, he looked at movies as a, you know, I think that he took them seriously when he was making them.
Yeah.
But I don't think he was really that concerned about his career and where it was going. And I think he probably would have loved to have found another Kazan and done some more great stuff, but that wasn't happening. And he just, you know, made the movies that he got, and he made money so that he could do things that he thought were more important than making movies. He could, you know, keep his place in Tahiti. He could do, he could be involved in political, in these political projects that he thought were much more interesting and much more important than movies. It just wasn't that important to him. You know, it was important to other people, but it wasn't that important to him. So I don't think he was, you know, I don't know. I can't say for sure. I can't be inside his head, but something tells me he wasn't really worried about it. He wasn't thinking, you know, oh no, what am I going to do with my career? I think he was just fine with things the way they were. Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, like George said, that's just not the way he looked at it. You know, he wasn't that worried about it.
Well, generally speaking, a person who turns themselves into a Jabba the Hutt figure is expressing some vision of themselves. It has to do with how you see yourself. It's about insulating yourself or about low self-esteem or something.
Right.
Emotional hunger, but my God, I mean, that was like... you know, I just know people who know him that feel that he was expressing something very primal and deep about his own self-worth.
You mean when he gained weight as when he got older?
Yeah, when he became Jabba the Hutt. Became the
third.
He didn't gain weight. He became almost comically fat, you know.
Yeah, that's hard to say. What that was. I don't know. I did. I asked a lot of people about that, and different people had different things to say. He did. He did have a weight problem. So did that it did that it ran in his family. So maybe it may have been partly a genetic thing. It may have been. Who knows what it was? I'm sure it was. A lot of people, get a lot of people gain weight when they get older too. So I don't know how
in our community though.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the West Coast film community. People looking like walruses are that's common in airports when you go to Houston.
Yeah, I'm from Toledo. There's a lot of them there.
That's the national. I don't know how many people are obese. That's common. But I was talking to Ken Kesey's son one time when we were at the Sundance Film Festival, way back. I'd say it was like '97 or '98. I remember this comment very vividly. He and I were looking out at Main Street of all these Los Angeles people and New York people there, and he said, "Where are all the fat people?"
Yeah. They're in the middle.
they're not here for some reason. I don't know what that is.
No, boy, but the area that I come from, you go to a shopping mall and boy, you see a lot.
Another thing that I had differing information on is I had asked privately, just because I was curious myself, because I'm friendly with the director, Tony Kaye, with whom Brando embarked on this venture called Lying for
yes.
Living. And that was videotaped, what he did, they asked him, because they wanted to market these DVDs, which is basically about Brando talking about acting and giving advice to people about acting. The idea was to sell them. It was supposed to be a revenue stream, and he invited several name actors, including Leonardo DiCaprio and Sean Penn, I believe John Voight and several others, to take part in it. And it's inconceivable by any rational standard that they would do this and somehow do it so that their agents would be upset about clearances later on. There's no way they did this unless they're on drugs without figuring out the rights issues. In other words, I, Leonardo DiCaprio, agree to appear in this documentary that Marlon Brando is making, and da 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 da. It had to be worked out. Well, Leslie was saying that it's probably that he understood that the rights weren't worked out, which makes no sense at all. None.
Yeah, that's kind of what we'd heard. That it's just the whole thing is just kind of still kind of being figured out. And
I've been sitting there for about 3 years or 4 years, and I understood that that they just decided not to, the estate rather,
right.
Decided against it. Something about the content of it, let's just say, not to dominate the conversation here, sorry, but I just want to say that if Marlon Brando, maybe it wasn't a beautiful assemblage of footage, certainly for the sake of the documentary, there must have been some portions that would have been interesting to see. I mean, it was Marlon at the end of his life talking about his thing that he's famous for. You'd think there'd be something. And I was really expecting that to at least a portion of it, but I was surprised.
Yeah, it would have been nice to see it. And, the people at the estate were so great to work with. They were so helpful, but they just said that was right now that footage is just too complicated. They just haven't, cleared the rights for it and figured out exactly what to do with that footage yet. It would be really interesting to see.
Who is your point man with the estate? Was it Mike Medavoy?
He was one of the point people, and then we also spoke with we're dealing with the lawyers for the estate.
Okay. Well, anyway, the other thing was that I thought that would be, it's a real tragedy, it's a shame, but I've always had this dream. It's probably not based upon reality, but I know that having read Peter Manso's book about Marlon Brando's directing, the only film he directed, which is called One-Eyed Jacks, which came out in 1960,
mm-hmm.
there was an enormous amount of footage that was put together, and something like a five-hour cut to begin with.
Yeah.
And I'd always dreamed that there might be some... something left somewhere, like some footage. There always is.
Like, that was our dream too. Wouldn't that have been wonderful if we could have come up with that, the missing 3.5 hours of that movie?
Or even a portion of just a little bit, something.
Martin Scorsese said said that he actually checked into it. That was a dream of his too at one time, and he went looking for that footage as well and didn't come up with anything.
When did he attempt that? I didn't know about that effort that he made.
I think he did it quite a while ago, like a number of years ago.
Okay.
When he was a young, you know, film buff, you know.
Yeah.
He told us in his interview that he tried. He went looking, he went asking, he thought it would be amazing, you know, wonderful to uncover that footage. He couldn't uncover it either. It seems like it's gone, which is just it'll probably turn up in somebody's closet someday, you know. But
that's the thing. Private collectors are the ones that tend to have have this footage. When and if you do find it, it frequently is in the hands of private collectors.
Thank God for private collectors.
Yeah.
No, really. I mean, they're the ones, a lot of times, at least, especially, you know, I would say, you know, 30 years ago, Hollywood, or 40 years ago, maybe, you know, Hollywood didn't really have a very good sense of its own history. And so many things would have gotten lost if it hadn't been for some collectors finding these things that were thrown out or tossed aside and saying, I think I'm just going to keep that for a little while.
Yeah.
Thank goodness those people are out there hanging on to these things.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Having worked in this kind of project, I've been working in Hollywood history documentaries for over 10 years now, and those collectors are our best friends. They're just, it's wonderful the things that they have, and that they take care of these things and keep them and make sure nothing happens to them. They're wonderful.
Right.
So, but I also, you know, I wanted to get back to, you know, the lying for a living thing. George Engwin did talk about it to us when he did his interview, and he said that, he looked at it, when Marlon was trying to do something with it, he was trying to figure out if he could make money with it. And he said, the only really interesting part was the fight with Tony Kaye. He said, that was Marlon. He said it was that anarchy, that crazy, you know, that just total mayhem. That to him was that's Brando right there.
Right.
That to him, that was the only.
That was on tape. You're saying when they got into their discussion, like when Tony Kaye dressed like Osama bin Laden and all that.
Right. And I guess he got apparently he yelled. You know he. There was kind of a rule about no judgment, no harsh judgment, no criticism, and Tony Kaye, from at least from what I read, you know, Tony Kaye saw these actors were doing a scene, and he just just started yelling, you know, you're terrible, you people are terrible, and then he and Brando got into a big fight, and he ended up walking, you know, storming off, and George said that was interesting. And the whole thing kind of fell apart, you know.
But
it's very, it would be great. I would love to be able to see that footage someday. I would love to.
And of course, one wonders about footage of any kind, from any outtakes of anything. Was that ever looked into? Were you guys able, I mean, of any film, let's say Viva Zapata, for instance, or anything along those lines. Did you guys ever have a chance to?
I think we did a pretty good job of turning up all the footage we could find.
Yeah.
There is a little bit of footage that was taken behind the scenes of The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Right. Okay.
And that's really wonderful. There's a little shot of him with, he's flying a paper airplane, and that paper airplane is actually made from a page in his script. He's, like, actually tearing out pages from the script and turning them into paper airplanes. So that was pretty funny. There's a few shots of him that were taken behind the scenes of that film. We were really lucky to have a lot of behind-the-scenes photos that we uncovered that were taken by Sam Shaw.
Are you talking about the Kevin McCarthy Monty Clift footage?
No, there are actually some photos. There were a lot of photos of him behind the scenes in, I believe it's Viva Zapata and One-Eyed Jack.
Oh, okay.
I don't think most of those photos have been seen before. And those are just, you know, really fantastic, you know, behind the scenes photos.
Sure.
But as far as footage, we tried our best, and we didn't.
Yeah.
You know, we pretty much everything we found is in there.
Okay.
There's some of the stuff. You know, the French. You know, our my associate producer and researcher Derek Greer did a wonderful job of turning up some footage that I don't think anybody knew existed. That footage. footage of him doing the Tahitian dancing.
Now where is that from? I was wondering about that.
Yeah, that came from a French archive, and that is footage from a UNICEF benefit.
A UNICEF benefit. It was on television, of course.
I guess. I'm not even sure where it was on first.
Oh.
From a French archive. I could find out the specifics of that if you'd like. It's been so long. It's still taken so long to make. I don't remember where a lot of this stuff came from anymore.
but it was not on American television, but on French television, you're saying?
No, absolutely. Yeah, no, it was definitely French right. footage. I doubt that it's ever been seen here.
And I presume, obviously, it was at the time of the release of Mutiny on the Bounty, no?
I think it was a little bit later than that.
Okay.
I think I can't remember the date that we ended up figuring out on that, but I think it was more like late 60s.
Okay. Oh, late 60s. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And he's dancing. I believe it's Tarita that he's dancing with. It's just fantastic footage. And
I understand that Viva Zapata is supposed to come out on Fox home video DVD sometime. That they have. Yeah, it's the one film left, I think, of his major period from 1950 to 54.
Mm-hmm.
That is not hasn't been given a decent treatment on.
I'm really glad they're doing that.
Yeah.
That's an important one.
So why did you guys decide, just to go back to this one more time, and why didn't you talk to someone who wasn't emotionally enamored and had an emotional history of a positive or at least a caring nature? Why not give someone who was like Peter Mansell or somebody who was more, dispassionate in their attitude? Why not do that? Just to give
it
a little different flavor.
I'm not sure whether... In my experience is... you can do... I'm just trying to think of how to say this. It's like I'm kind of piecing my thoughts together about that right now. There are documentaries that do focus on the more salacious and gossipy and negative things about people. But my experience has been that the people who are interviewed for those documentaries usually didn't really know the person.
Peter Mansell certainly knew him in every sense, although maybe he didn't personally know him as a friend, but you can't say, well, he's just a gossip artist. The man spent years writing a book about him.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I would never, I don't want to say anything about him personally, him specifically, but I like to do documentaries that are really just, people who knew the person. It's a different film.
Yeah.
I guess, it's just a different film. For me, I like to do, I enjoy doing things with people who are really close to someone, people who really, really knew them.
Yeah.
Sure. And here, I feel like someone like George Englund. I mean, George, oh boy, George gave me the toughest time when I talked to him. He just ran me through. He made me jump through so many hoops because he wanted to make sure it wasn't just going to be a puff piece and just a tribute and just people saying, oh, he was wonderful, he was wonderful, he was wonderful. He wanted to get farther in. He wanted to get to the meat, and do a little bit more of a thorough examination.
Right.
And it took me quite a while to convince him that we would do that. And I feel like George was pretty, actually, kind of, really pretty tough on him in a lot of places in his interview. And, to me, that's very valuable. And someone who is somebody's closest friend can be critical of him. And
yeah, that was the thing about him trying to get him to do a scene differently in The Ugly American and Marlon
Brando,
just going, yeah, okay, and then just doing exactly as he wanted to do.
Exactly, yeah. And to me, that carries a lot of weight. And, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm too soft, but that's kind of the way I like to go with it. I like to just, talk to people who knew people the best. And we're discussing him. It is for Turner Classic Movies, and I think it's primarily an examination of him as an actor, as the greatest actor.
Right.
Certainly of his generation, and different people have different definitions of how great an actor he was, but that's what our main focus was, and that's why people want to watch this documentary. That's why he's worth having a film like this about, and so that's really my primary focus. I'm not that interested in uncovering the less
Yeah.
The more salacious, I suppose, aspects of his life. So that's what we chose to do.
I tend to like
making documentaries that don't have biographers in them, that have, you know, that are all people telling first person stories.
I understand.
That to me is interesting. That's storytelling.
Right. Yeah.
So that's what I tried to do with this. It was right. Just people who knew him telling their first person stories. So there was no, well, he said that he did this, and I heard that he did that, and I heard that he did that all the time, and well, everybody knew this about him. I didn't want any of that. I wanted, you know, this is the Marlon I knew.
I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Well, the other thing was, I was just kind of wondering is that, was there stuff, there always is, stuff that you wanted to include and you really loved, but it somehow didn't fit into the organic whole of the final cut. Was there stuff that might be on the DVD that didn't make it into the cut,
I hope so. I hope they put some extras on the DVD. I've heard that they might, and there's so many things, so many heartbreaks.
What do you mean that you've heard? I mean, who would know? I thought you guys were the kind of the who would be making that call for you?
Well, that's Warner Home Video. I work for Leslie Greif, and
right.
we're the production company.
Yeah.
And we made it for Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah.
And Warner will be doing the home video distribution. So, so I'm not in on all of those decisions.
Yeah. Okay.
All
right.
But yeah, but I mean, there are so many things. You know, Ellen Adler told so many wonderful, really personal things about him. There were things that I wanted so badly to include. She told stories about how he loved these romantic, beautiful, like bittersweet kind of images. That he loved the way that they had she had some glass curtains in her house, and the way he loved the way they moved in the breeze. And just these beautiful, and he loved certain, you know, willow trees, and he loved the way certain light looked in certain trees, and all these really poetic images. And I really would have loved to include more of those images in the film. I think that would have been really fun.
Yeah, that would have been nice. Yeah.
Yeah, right. But you know, there were a lot of things like that. Just a lot of wonderful stories,
right.
And everybody has so many more stories. You know, Penelope Ann Miller has.
Right.
You know, so many things to say about him on the set of The Freshman, and his high school friends had more stories about him. I mean,
sure.
Just everybody had more stories about him.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's just there's so much. It would be wonderful if people could see the rest of the footage. It's just a million heartbreaks from this project.
Now it's on tonight, and it's on tomorrow night.
That's right.
And I presume that they're having obviously other. They must have other showings besides just the ones tonight, no?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Okay. And you
sure.
can access that, I'm sure, through the TCM website. Well, thank you very much.
Can I just add one more thing?
Oh, absolutely.
A little note. The whole thing about why he got fat and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't like to try to get inside somebody's brain for something like that. You know, and it's like, I think, you know, people... We let people kind of, in the documentary, people always gave their thoughts, you know, one way or the other, what they thought was going on with him. We kind of get the side of him that was very, you know, kind of sad and given up on the world, and then we get people who thought he was not like that at all, that he had, you know, and that he was this very happy person who was still interested in changing the world. And I think that there were both sides of that to him, and it's very hard to get inside someone's head. I mean, it's impossible to get inside someone's head, especially someone like Marlon Brando, and to say this is what happened to him, this is why he got fat, this is why he was like he was. How on earth could you possibly know? So I just wanted to...
You know the thing, the really funny story that I heard, that I don't have no idea if it's actually true, but that he had... allegedly, you know, he would get into periodic, health kicks in which he'd want to, you know, work out and get himself in better shape. And that he bought one of those things where you, like, hang from the ceiling with the boots. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Right, right.
And he hung himself from the ceiling with apparently a trainer or assistant, whatever. And and that when he was upside down, the fat on his frame kind of rolled, fell forward, and almost suffocated him, and he had to. Well, it's not. I'm not laughing at his sad fortune, but it was kind of funny when I heard it, and I was just.
Yeah. Well,
is that a true story?
Well, human, isn't it? This is like anybody would do, you know, who had a weight problem would probably try to do something about it.
Yeah.
You know? I'm trying to remember a story that Quincy Jones told me. I could probably call you back and tell you who it was because I can't remember who it was. Mm. He said that he was in his interview. He said he was sitting with Marlon one day and they looked out the window and they saw someone. I think it was Charles Bronson, but I'm not sure who it was. If it was Charles Bronson or someone else like that, jogging by. jogging down the street.
Okay.
And Marlon said, "Wow, look at that. That is fantastic. That is really inspiring." Mm-hmm. And then he got up and he went into the kitchen and got some ice cream out of the freezer.
That's funny. That's us more than I think we'd all care to admit.
So, you know, I mean, the guy, he was human. He had, you know, we're all, you know, where he was, you know, I'm sure he had a lot of sadness and a lot of disillusionment and a lot of disillusionment and a lot of, you know, a lot of insecurities, as we all do, you know. And I think, you know, it's possible that he just had quite, like, a little bit more of everything than anybody had, like a little bit more of any feeling than anybody else had. I think that's quite possible. So that could have been what happened, you know, what happened to him. I have this feeling that maybe things really affected him very, very profoundly.
Yeah. Well, that's I'm hoping to see Viva Zapata one day on Fox Film Video. I hope that. By the way, there's a rumor that the Criterion people would like to. I'm told that they are aware and somewhat interested in getting the good materials of One Eye Jacks together. So that can be repaired, because that looks awful on all those public domain DVDs.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And that's a very handsomely shot film. That would be great to see someday.
That would be great. Yeah, and I know that Martin Scorsese said that he was very interested in making sure that happened as well.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that about Scorsese, but anyway. Well, thank you very much for taking the time. It was lovely to speak with you. You're very knowledgeable, and I think that anybody that has... I particularly hope that anybody... who hears about this, who's under 30, who maybe doesn't know the Brando legend as well as older people do, will look at it, because it certainly does acquaint you and make you understand the whole thing in a very full and you know, knowledgeable way. It's a good piece to take in.
Thank you. Thanks. And I hope it wasn't too much of a Valentine. You know, I tried to be real. You know.
No, but the only person, the only thing I said is that that you know, with people who felt love or caring, you're going to get that from them. So
yeah.
Know, and I understand your thing. You know, you're saying I don't want any. I've heard that stuff, and I understand that. That's a totally respectable way to go. You know.
Yeah, you know, and it's like I always think, what if it were me? You know, like what if somebody were doing something about me? Maybe that's not a good, you know, not a good quality for someone who makes documentaries to have. But I can't help it. You know, I always think, do I want someone digging all this, you know, everything out of, you know, all the skeletons out of my closet just because I'm a great talent at whatever? You know, I don't know. I don't think I do.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an interesting, it's a very interesting issue. It's something you could talk about forever. So.
All right. Well, awfully.
So if you want the name of the person that he saw jogging by, I'll look it up.
That's great. All right. Well, anyway, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And I really hope to see. I hope that Warner Brothers decides to show more on the DVD. That'd be great. I understand that Ronnie Sass is going to call me about that, so maybe she'll tell me something.
Oh, great. Yeah, because I don't want to give anything away, because I don't know for sure. You know, I heard that it's a possibility, but I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I'm not on the inside of that at all. You know, we make the film and we give it to them and we're done. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Very nice
Thank
to speak
you so
to you.
Much.
Have a good day.
Thanks, you
Bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye.
Yeah.